Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Brian Lynn has a story on scientists trying to make pig livers able to be transplanted into people. Jill Robbins has a story on how to keep a pet betta fish. Later, we present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
American scientists are seeking to make pig livers behave more like human livers so they can be transplanted into people. The re-engineered livers could help fill a big need for replacement organs. The first step for scientists is to wash away the pig cells that help the organ do its work. This leaves the liver white and clear, with no blood vessels remaining in the tissue. Next, human liver cells are added to the empty pig liver. The living cells move throughout the organ in an effort to restart the liver's functions. Jeff Ross is head of the U.S.-based Miromatrix, the medical company involved in the research. He told the Associated Press, "Because we remove all the cells from that pig organ, our bodies don't see it as a pig organ." He explained that the process can nearly regrow the organ. Ross said the company aims to begin its first human testing sometime in 2023. The goal of the testing will be to try to prove that the method can create functioning human livers. If the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approves the testing, the first experiment will take place outside a patient's body. A pig-turned-human-like liver will be put next to a patient to temporarily filter the blood of someone whose liver had failed. Experts say if the liver assist experiment works, it would mark a major step forward in developing genetically engineered organs that could be transplanted into humans. Dr. Sander Florman is the head of transplant operations at New York's Mount Sinai Hospital. He told the AP the re-engineering of animal organs for humans might sound like something only seen in science fiction. Florman said that he thinks the liver assist method is likely to be used to help patients without the need to implant a full organ into their bodies. He said such a system can help save the lives of people suffering from organ failure. More than 105,000 people are currently on the U.S. waiting list for an organ transplant. Thousands of them will likely die before they get a chance to receive a new liver. Thousands more never even get put on the list because they are not considered the best candidates. The number of organs we have available are never going to be able to meet the demand, Dr. Amit Tewar told the AP. He is a transplant surgeon at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Tewar, who is not involved in Miromatrix's research, said he thinks the planned outside-the-body testing would be an early first step in the development of animal organs for human use. In 2021, researchers with Miromatrix and the Minnesota-based Mayo Clinic reported successfully transplanting a version of bioengineered livers into pigs. In Maryland, a man lived for 2 months after receiving the world's first heart transplant from a pig in January 2022. To reduce the chance the man's body would reject the heart, scientists removed several genes from the donor pig that are linked to organ rejection. The FDA is currently considering whether to approve additional transplant experiments that would permit kidneys or hearts from gene-edited pigs to be placed into humans. The bioengineering process, however, is very different. It does not require organs from genetically engineered pigs. It only requires leftover organs from slaughterhouses, places where animals are killed for food. I'm Brian Lynn.
Betta fish are known for their bright colors. They are popular with Americans as pets. They are often kept alone in a small tank. Male fish are prized for their stronger colors and beautiful fins. With good care, bettas live 3 to 5 years, but some are known to live 10 years. In the northern parts of the world, winter has arrived, and some people might be wondering what to do with their time now that they are indoors. Keeping a betta fish can be a fun hobby that does not involve going outside. It also does not require too much skill, but you do have to be willing to learn. But how do you take care of a betta fish? First, betta fish need a home. A tank that holds at least 11 liters of water is suggested, although 19 liters is better. Larger tanks are better because the water needs to be changed less often and provides a healthier environment for the fish. Second, the tank needs small rocks or sand at the bottom. In the pet fish industry, this is called substrate. A few centimeters at the bottom are all that is needed. Clean the rocks or sand with running water without soap until it runs clear before adding them to the tank. Third, a filter is needed to purify the water. Many people keep bettas without filters, but the fish should be raised with a filter to stay healthy. Follow the filter's guidelines and choose a filter that is the right size for the tank. Fourth, a heater is suggested to keep your fish in good condition. These fish prefer warmer water, usually between 24 and 28 degrees Celsius. Pet stores sell heaters for fish. Choose the right size for your aquarium and follow its guidelines or instructions to set it up. A light and decorations are the final details to set up your tank. A light may not be necessary if the room receives enough natural light, but an electric light might be helpful if you wish to grow plants in the tank. If real plants seem like too much work, plastic plants work as well. You can also find other decorations like rocks or wood pieces. Just make sure they are safe for fish. The quality of the water is important to keeping a fish alive and healthy. The filter and heater will do a lot to keep the water safe for the fish. But there are additional steps you should take. Make sure the water you add to the tank is safe for fish. Tap water can be used, but it usually contains a chlorine-based chemical harmful to fish. So additional steps need to be taken. Krista Keller is a professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign College of Veterinary Medicine. Writing online in 2019, she said, "If tap water is used in the tank, it is recommended to use a dechlorinating product and test for heavy metals." Pet stores sell dechlorinating chemicals, and they are easy to use. Just follow the instructions on the container. Stores also sell home water testing products. But many fish stores are happy to test your water if you bring in a small amount. They can also provide advice on keeping fish in your area's water. After setting up your tank, there are a few more things to consider. You will need to feed your fish and change its water. There are many choices for food. There are pellets, frozen whole foods, freeze-dried foods, and live food. Pet stores will carry many of these. Feed your fish once to twice a day. Whatever food you choose, make sure it contains meat or insects, because that is what bettas eat in the wild. It is suggested to change 1/4 of your tank's water once every week or two. Remove the old water and add fresh water. Your filter may also require some additional cleaning every month or so. Male betta fish are kept alone because they are aggressive fish. Another name for bettas is Siamese fighting fish. Males should never be kept with other betta males. If you have a larger tank with other fish, they might live together peacefully. But know that male betta fish often attack other fish and may have to live separately. Female betta fish can live with other fish peacefully. A group of females can be kept, too. Make sure they have a tank that is large enough and a filter designed for the tank's size. I'm Jill Robbins.
Hi, Dr. Jill. So I just heard the story about keeping a pet betta fish. Can you teach our listeners some of the words and main points of the story?
Sure, Dan. I'd love to. First, we talked about keeping the fish in a large tank or aquarium.
Right. That's better for their health.
Yes, and there are a couple of new words related to the tank. You know that you need to put some small rocks in the bottom. That is called a substrate.
Oh, I've heard that helps the microorganisms to grow and keep the water chemical levels balanced.
Right. And you should always use water that is treated or safe for fish. You can remove the chemicals, like chlorine, with a dechlorinating product. The prefix D means to remove something.
Does the story talk about playing games with your fish?
No, but I've heard that's a good idea. Fish can recognize their owner's face, and you can play with them by moving your finger against the glass of the tank.
Hmm. I guess I'll have to get a fish now and try that. Thanks, Dr. Jill.
Thanks, Dan, and thanks for listening, everybody.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By 1863, America's northern states and southern states had been fighting a bitter civil war for 2 years. Both sides felt the pressure of the costly struggle. The South was beginning to suffer from a lack of supplies and men for its armies. The North was beginning to suffer from a lack of fighting spirit. Larry West and Tony Riggs describe an anti-war movement that was growing.
Many Americans in northern states did not support the war policies of Union President Abraham Lincoln. Some said openly that they did not care who won the war. They just wanted to be left alone. Coal miners in Pennsylvania protested against a law drafting men into the Union Army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to Pennsylvania to put down the riots. Farmers in Ohio also protested. They refused to be drafted. They attacked soldiers who were sent to arrest them. The worst anti-war riots, however, took place in New York City.
On July 13th, 1863, a crowd formed outside a New York draft office. Inside, Army officials were choosing the names of men who would be taken into the Army. Each name was written on a separate piece of paper. The papers were mixed together in a big box. The officials then began to remove the papers, one at a time. They made a list of the names. These were the men of New York who must go off to fight. On that day, however, the list was never completed. The crowd outside the draft office became louder. There were shouts of protest against the draft and against the Civil War.
Suddenly, a stone crashed through the office window, then another, and another. The army officials escaped, but a policeman inside could not get away. The rioters beat him badly. Then they set fire to the draft office and several buildings nearby. The riot spread across the city. The riot began as a political protest against the draft. Poor men opposed the draft because it permitted rich men to escape military service. The law said a man who was drafted could stay out of the army by doing one of two things. He could pay the government $300, or he could pay another man to serve in his place. If a drafted man could not do either thing, then he must join the army or be shot as a deserter.
In the wartime economy of the North, prices were rising much faster than wages. Even a man with a good job had a difficult time feeding his family. It was impossible for him to pay the government $300 or pay someone else to serve for him in the army. Poor men protested against the law. They said it was unfair. "It's a rich man's war," they cried, "but a poor man's fight. The rich man's money against the poor man's blood."
There was something else that deeply troubled working men in the North. Anti-war activists told them that the war was not being fought to save the Union, but to free Negro slaves. The activists said the freed Negroes would move north and take jobs away from whites. Many men believed this. They said they would not fight.
Then, on July 13th, the angers and fears of working men in New York exploded. Their attack on the draft office that day was just the beginning. The violence lasted 3 days. The rioters beat many policemen to death. They beat, burned, and hanged every Negro they could find. They also killed many whites who tried to protect the Negroes. By the time soldiers stopped the rioting, 1,000 persons had been killed.
The leaders of the anti-war movement in the North were members of the opposition Democratic Party. They wore on their coats a copper penny showing the head of a Native American Indian. This gave them the name Copperheads. One important Copperhead was a former congressman from Ohio, Clement Vallandigham. Vallandigham made a speech criticizing the Union government. He was charged with violating a military law that banned such criticism. He was arrested.
The former congressman was taken before a military court. He objected. He said if he had broken a law, he should be tried by a civilian court. He demanded this as his constitutional right. The military judges rejected his argument. They found him guilty, and they sentenced him to remain in a Union military prison until the end of the war. People throughout the North were angry. Many did not support Clement Vallandigham's ideas, but they supported his right to speak freely. President Lincoln could approve or reject Vallandigham's sentence. His decision would show which issue was more important, the citizens' right to free speech or national security.
Lincoln was a good politician and a smart lawyer. He found an unexpected way to deal with the problem. He neither approved nor rejected the sentence. He changed it. Lincoln ordered Vallandigham to be turned over to the Confederate Army. Then he explained that Vallandigham had not been arrested for criticizing the government. His arrest was made, Lincoln said, because he was trying, with some success, to prevent men from entering the army. He was urging soldiers already in the army to leave it. Mr. Vallandigham was not arrested because he was damaging the political chances of the administration or the interests of the commanding general, but because he was damaging the army, upon which the life of the nation depends. The Confederates welcomed the anti-war leader. They helped him get to Canada. Vallandigham continued his anti-war campaign from there.
President Lincoln was troubled by the anti-war movement and violent opposition to the draft laws. He felt he had to make citizens understand why such laws were necessary. He prepared a speech which explained his thoughts. "There can be no army without men," Lincoln wrote. "Men can be had only with their permission or without it. We can no longer get enough men willingly. So there is a draft. If you dispute this and declare that men are still willing to serve in the army, then prove it by volunteering yourselves in large numbers. Then I will give up the draft."
Lincoln never gave this speech. He felt it was too direct. Instead, he gave a different kind of speech to the people of the Union. "You want peace," Lincoln said, "and you blame me that we do not have it. But how can we get it? There are but three ways possible. First, to put down the Southern Rebellion by force of arms. This I am trying to do. Are you for it? If you are, then we are so far agreed. If you are not for it, a second way is to give up the Union. I am against this. Are you for the Union? If you are, you should say so clearly. If you are not for force and not for dissolving the Union, there only remains some kind of compromise. I do not believe any such compromise is possible."
Politicians urged President Lincoln to investigate the anti-war protests in New York to learn who had led them. He refused. Lincoln believed that starting an investigation would be like lighting a barrel of gunpowder. He already was fighting a bitter struggle against rebels in the South. He did not want to fight the people of the North, too. Southern leaders were pleased with the Copperheads' anti-war movement. Confederate General Robert E. Lee saw it as a sign of weakness in the Northern war effort. He also saw it as an opening for a military victory.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.